KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
So I am in the East Lake neighborhood of Oakland.
Glen Park.
Rock Ridge.
I live in West Alameda.
Montclair.
Bushrod.
Coming up, 1 million Californians don't have clean drinking water, and the state's finally reached an agreement to fund a solution.
Everybody decided we should use cap and trade money, which is interesting because that's earmarked for the reduction of greenhouse gas emissions.
Then the Golden State Warriors lost the NBA Finals last week. Now they're on to an uncertain offseason. We'll reflect with the latest episode of Bounce, the Warriors' last season in Oakland.
We'll be forever Oakland. You know, the Warriors will always have a home in our hearts because that's where they won these championships. That's where they started the legacy here in Oakland.
Saying goodbye to the Dubs coming up on Cross Currents. Millions of Californians across the state lack access to clean drinking water. And if this sounds familiar or unsurprising, it's because the problem and possible solutions have been in the headlines for years. When Governor Newsom took office, he revamped the discussion by proposing a fee on drinking water to fund unsafe systems. That didn't pass. But earlier this month, the new state budget assigned money to a new safe drinking water fund with revenues from the state's cap and trade program. KALW's environment reporter Angela Johnston joins me to explain. Hi, Angela.
Hi.
So first of all, you've been following this clean drinking water issue for a while. Can you just remind us what that means when you say the water is unclean?
Yeah, I started paying attention to this almost a year and a half ago when the legislature was debating the same problem. And so what unclean water means, Well, in hundreds of communities across the state, the water coming out of the tap was not drinkable. Mm-hmm. So some community water systems are flagged because they test high for toxins like arsenic and nitrates and other chemicals that just aren't safe to drink. And others have more persistent problems that the community just can't afford to fix because they're low income. And you've probably heard of places that have to truck in bottled water or boil everything before they drink it.
Right, like in the Central Valley.
Yeah, many of these places are in the Central Valley, but I actually found a few in the Bay Area. For instance, Pescadero High School, just south of Half Moon Bay. Mm-hmm. Students there hadn't been able to drink the water for years because of nitrates that seeped into the water supply. They're surrounded by farmland, which fertilizer, runoff, and everything has nitrates in it. Mm-hmm. High amounts of nitrates can cause cancer, high blood pressure, blood poisoning, thyroid problems, and it's especially risky for young children. Mm-hmm. The water fountains at that school were turned off, and in the kitchen, lunch ladies had to wash all of the lettuce and produce for school lunches with gallon jugs of water.
Yeah.
And when I reported this back in January 2018, they were trying to find a way to drill a new well, but they just couldn't afford it at the time.
So what did they do about this back then?
Well, early last year, the state was considering this bill that would help places like Pescadero High School and all these other communities with unsafe water. It would help them put in new wells or hook up with larger water systems or suppliers. And in the case of Pescadero, it would have been the larger Half Moon Bay water system. And the money would have come from a tax on water bills paid by consumers across the state, as well as a tax on fertilizer that farmers use. And surprisingly, the ag industry was supportive of this, but local water agencies, the people that supply the water to customers, didn't like this plan because they'd have to eat the cost and pass that on to their consumers. Mm. So the bill eventually died.
Okay, now we're talking about it again.
Right. So in Governor Newsom's State of the State, he brought it up. He said the fact that millions of Californians still lack access to clean water is, quote, a moral disgrace and a medical emergency. And he called for sustained funding to ensure that all Californians have access to clean water. Mm. And later, he announced that he wanted to charge water customers anywhere from 95 cents to $10 a month on their water bills, that's depending on how much you use, to raise money for what he called a safe drinking water fund, plus using this tax on fertilizers again. So a very similar proposal to the previous bill that I reported on a year and a half ago, that the bill that died in the legislature.
Mm. And so what was the opposition to this new but similar plan?
Basically, the arguments were the same, and it was criticized as a new tax. They ultimately rejected Newsom's proposal. But they said they'd find another way to get some money into a safe drinking water fund.
Okay, did they?
Well, the Assembly came up with one idea for charging water providers and polluters, and the Senate said we should use money from the general fund. Remember, the state has a $20.6 billion surplus, so some people said, why don't we just take from that? Ultimately, the state decided that we should use cap and trade money, $100 million of it.
Why? Isn't that money used for greenhouse gas reduction?
Yeah, there's this constitutional restriction saying that cap and trade money should be used for combating climate change.
Mm-hmm.
So there are those who are really on board with curbing greenhouse gases and who are environmentalists and probably agree that we should fund safe, clean drinking water, but who aren't super happy about this. Cap and trade money does go into a fund that's called the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund, which, as you said, is supposed to pay for things that would do only that. In the past, it's gone toward things like funding high-speed rail with the hope that high-speed rail would remove cars from the road and clean air programs. So some people say we should have gone with the idea of a water tax or taken it out of the general fund because we still would have tackled this huge problem where people can't get drinking water, but also left money for clear climate change problems.
So this just goes against the constitutional restriction?
How did they
get around that?
I mean, it's the same it's a stretch.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people are pleased it's even happening since, you know, we've been talking about this for years,
right?
And this bell died the last time around. And supporters do argue that climate does impact water scarcity. It's, you know, clean water and water scarcity are not exactly the same things, but you can relate. And for example, the more we have droughts and extreme weather, the more our water supply could be negatively affected.
Back to the Pescadero High School you reported on in January of last year. Any update on that? It's been almost a year and a half. Were they able to secure their water source?
Well, unfortunately, when I checked in a few weeks ago, they still didn't have access to clean water. And, you know, maybe with this new fund that's being established, they'll be able to expedite that. But the most recent news is that the high school tried drilling another well, hoping to go deeper down to get water that didn't have nitrates in it. But that didn't end up having enough water to supply this very small high school, very limited amount of water. So the county, San Mateo County, drilled another well that does have enough water to supply the high school and potentially a fire station, but it's outside of the high school's service area. So it has to go to this countywide vote, and that won't potentially happen until November 2020, until that election. So they may have to wait about another year and a bit to see what happens. So, you know, there's a lot of talk about clean water with this new fund. So we'll see what happens, and I'll be checking in and paying attention.
And we'll be waiting for the news. Thanks, Angela.
Thank you.
Angela is KALW's environment reporter. You can hear her stories at KALW.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. The Golden State Warriors season ended last week with a dramatic and painful loss to the Toronto Raptors. It's not the send-off Oakland fans were hoping for as the team bids farewell to Oracle Arena. We've been covering the Dubs every Wednesday during this postseason run with stories about the team and their impact on Oakland. It's all part of KALW's original podcast, Bounce, the Warriors' last season in Oakland. Host Ben Trefney takes it from here.
They're done. The Golden State Warriors season, which started way back in September, lasted just about as long as it possibly could. And in the final contest, it was Game 6 Klay all the way.
Klay Thompson, pull-up two-pointer, and that's good. Thompson drills it. Thompson off the dribble, to the rack, layup is good!
Game 6 Klay is a reference to 2017, when shooting guard Klay Thompson made an NBA record 11 three-pointers in a must-win game at Oklahoma City. And just like then, in Game 6 of these 2019 finals, he was hot.
Thompson pulls back, three-pointer, puts it in! Thompson for three! Thompson long three!
Then, late in the third quarter, with the team rolling, it all came crashing down.
Thompson running the floor, and a foul. And Thompson grabs his left knee, now writhing in pain. Steph Curry slamming the ball on the court, so upset.
It was a torn anterior cruciate ligament, the ACL, an all too common sports injury where the knee bends the wrong way.
And everybody for the Warriors and the franchise and here in the stands holding their breath.
Thompson was helped off the court, made a couple free throws, but then he was out for the rest of the game. The Warriors fought valiantly, and they had a chance to give a final thrill to the last crowd ever to watch a game at Oracle Arena.
An NBA championship on the line. Iguodala throws it to Green, who catches it, back to Curry, puts up a three. Won't go! Rebound Cousins, deflected, picked up by Leonard, ball still loose. They dive on it and try and call time, and a timeout called.
It was chaotic, and then it was over. The Toronto Raptors took the crown. The beaten Warriors headed to the locker room, and the fans gave one last serenade to the home court. Now, a season of promise turns into an off-season of uncertainty. This is Bounce, the Warriors' last season in Oakland. I'm Ben Trefney. It played out as amazing theater, but instead of a triumph, the end of the season felt tragic. The Bay Area heroes give everything they had, but the basketball court turned into a battlefield of broken bodies. After their season was over, Coach Steve Kerr was asked if he wondered, what if so many people hadn't gotten hurt?
Yeah, I mean, more than the what ifs is just feeling bad for the players involved. You know, injuries are always part of the NBA season. Any professional sport, injuries play a huge role, and it's just the nature of these injuries, the severity of these injuries. What matters is, Kevin Durant is going to miss next season with an Achilles tear, and Clay suffered a knee injury, but it's just brutal. It's just brutal what these guys have had to deal with and what they're dealing with right now.
Hey, farewell to Arco, guys. Shirts here. Half price. Shirts here. 10 bucks, guys. Farewell to Arco.
Outside Oracle, fans dealt with a rare disappointment as they made their way home one last time. They spoke of heart, hope, and the healing they want for their fallen Warriors, including Durant, who signed with the Dubs as a free agent in 2016, creating a team many thought couldn't be beaten.
I think it's a tragedy, like a Greek tragedy. There's all this consternation or critique of him, even though I held a little bit based on how he came to the team, but he's a legend for what he did.
Next season, I hope we still have KD and Draymond and Clay and Steph and the Hampton Five, and that we just are ready to get back at it again.
And another championship!
We'll be forever Oakland. You know, the Warriors will always have a home in our hearts because that's where they won these championships. That's where they started the legacy here in Oakland. So that's my parting remarks. I'll always be forever a Warrior fan and forever Oakland at the same time.
Farewell to the Arco, guys. 10 only, guys. 10 bucks, guys.
Those were Golden State fans Willie Johnson, Amy Fitzgerald, Kamika Dunlap, and KT, recorded after the final game ever at Oracle Arena. There are signs of the team all over the town, and that's not going to change for a while. In fact, the logo for this podcast is the iconic Warriors Bridge image dripping off a brick wall. And that's from a mural in Oakland by Illuminaries. Co-founders Tim Hahn and his friend Steve Ha were high school students in Newark during the 90s when they bonded over a fascination with graffiti art. Years later, they made free murals celebrating the Warriors, and that caught the team's eye. Tim and his crew are not only painting now for the Dubs and Stephen Curry, but they're producing their artwork out of state and overseas. Janae Darden followed Tim Hahn around Lake Merritt and Oakland's Temescal neighborhood to learn more about how Illuminaries get it done.
We are at the corner of 43rd and Telegraph in the Temescal area of North Oakland. Just putting up a little Warriors wall. I think we're going for Clay. I think we're going to make it a Clay figure. as far as street art goes, Oakland, the Bay Area, San Francisco, there's no permit needed. And so that's an awesome thing for the city to do, to allow building owners to make their own decision on what is on their building. This is unlike areas like Walnut Creek or other suburbs, which require permits up to like $1,000 sometimes.
So let's go back. So when did you start doing, what do you call it? Graffiti art, tagging, writing?
Graffiti is where the roots are from. And just growing up in the Bay Area, Berkeley, Oakland, Newark, Fremont area is where we all met, got together and started doing graffiti. Me and Steve Ha, shout out to Nam.
You've talked about running into the law when you were younger with your art.
Back in the 90s, there were a database like of collecting all of the tags. They're like storing them all. So that way when you got in trouble, they'd have like a long rap sheet for you of damages and whatnot. So we catch quite a big fine back in 99 2000.
What was the fine?
It was altogether was about I think I want to say like 27,000 or so, 28,000.
So were folks getting locked up back then?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they were treating it in 2000. They made graffiti a felony. They changed the law to make it like drastically more harsh. Before 2000, it was I think you had to cause like $5,000 or $10,000 of damage to get a felony, and then they changed it to like $500. So yeah, we knew people that were going to jail, and you know, it was criminalized. Well, they lumped things in with gangs instead of fostering the creativity into something positive. They were like just coming down real harsh with really, really harsh punishments.
Now more people are seeing it as art.
If you look at graffiti now, the level of execution is just way up. Like, people are just better at spray painting. The paint is better. Like, the paint all comes from Europe now. And then also, society has grown up a little bit also, that where people are, they've seen it around and they're not as afraid of it, and they maybe understand the culture a little bit more. And so street art itself is accepted, and now it's even sought after. So all these building owners want a mural on their building. It's raising, they can see it raising the value of that neighborhood, and we've seen that firsthand of you can change the neighborhood in a positive way with a nice piece of street art.
Wow, so graffiti art is raising the values of certain neighborhoods?
I believe so. Like, that's kind of what is driving us. Like, we go into some of these West Oakland neighborhoods that looked like it needed a facelift, and we just did a big mural, and you know, neighbors come out and they're thanking us and they're bringing us food and drinks and stuff. It's been a positive response.
When did this become a business?
I think our first paid mural was maybe in like 2006, I want to say. What happened was we transitioned into more like graphic design and digital art, and then at some point we were both like, man, we need to get back to painting real paint, because there's nothing like that can replace that in the digital world. And so we just kept going and started getting a lot of work.
And some of the work you've gotten is from the Warriors. You have your iPad here with some of your favorites, which this one is my favorite.
Yeah, this is the Mac Trey, we call it. It's the, you know, Curry as the Mac Dre figure.
And some people don't know who Mac Dre is.
You know, Mac Dre is a Bay Area legend. He's from Vallejo, but he was one of the innovators of the music you hear today that comes out of the Bay.
And it's blue, the backdrop is blue, and then it's gold letters, and it says Dubs, and then it has Steph, like, with this snarl, and his head's kind of cocked to the side, big fro.
A cool story about this was done during the finals. I think it was like game 3 of 2017, I want to say, when we finished it, and it went kind of viral online. And the next day, Steph was doing the this face like 3 times in that game. And so we were just like, I was just like, people were calling me, like, look what, they were sending me photos like, dude, that's can't be, is that a coincidence? Like, I wasn't sure. I didn't want to like assume it was because of the mural. But when I finally, you know, got to talk to him like later on, like a year later or something, I was asking him, he's like, of course that was because of the mural. He's like, I missed that mural because this mural got taken down. So
are y'all on first name basis? Like, he's like, Tim, what's everyone, up, Steph?
I thought everyone's on a first name basis with him. I don't think he probably knows our name. He knows the luminaries. I don't think he knows our names or nothing like that. But I mean, Under Armour told us that he had requested our work for his store. So that was an honor.
So I'm looking at, here's another photo of you holding the trophy.
That's right. Yeah. We got to, it was just a random thing. We had done a mural for the Warriors at the parade, and it was like the after party where all the players were with their families.
How did it feel to hold it?
It was way lighter than I thought.
How do you feel about them leaving the East Bay? I know you live in the East Bay. How do you feel about them leaving Oakland and going to San Francisco?
I mean, it's a little painful to hear at first. I always look on the positive side. It just could be so much worse. I'm happy that they didn't go anywhere else, definitely.
Will you still be working with them once they move to San Francisco, or do you know?
I hope so. We're maintaining our relationship with them, and we're trying to love to try to get some art inside the new stadium.
Are people looking at you as a sellout, saying you're not street because you're profiting from this?
Yeah, I mean, so as an artist, you know, there's people that think, oh, selling out, if you're getting paid for the art. That's another hot topic, obviously. I have the amount of creative freedom to do what I want to do and do the type of art I want to do. I say no to people when they're trying to make me do art that I don't want to do or I don't believe in. So everything that we do, we're doing it because we have the freedom to do it and we're getting paid for it. So it's a win-win.
So when you're done with this, are you just going to stand back and go, I did that?
I mean, that's the worst part at the end of a mural when you have to walk away from it. And a lot of these murals we do overseas sometimes, we're never going to see it again in person. So, yeah, we're going to have a few beers across the street there at the bar and just sit and admire it for a little bit and then move on.
That was street artist Tim Hahn, co-founder of Illuminaries, speaking with KALW's Janae Darden. And that story was part of episode 11 of Bounce, the Warriors' last season in Oakland. The Dubs had a very dramatic season, and you may want to go back and hear how it all unfolded. Find Bounce on your favorite podcast player and at KALW.org.
There's just one thing, baby, I really want you to do. One thing, baby, I really want you to do.
This music is by Howell Devine from San Francisco. He's performing at the Back Room in Berkeley this Friday night.
Girl, I'm in love with you. I'm trying to find out what you're gonna do. I'm begging you, begging you, if you don't know. I'm begging you, baby. I know that you don't know. All from you is a key to your door. I called you yesterday.
Today's Cross Currents team includes Jonathan Davis, Lisa Morehouse, Marissa Ortega-Welch, True Quinn, Jocelyn Tubankai, and Eli Wortschafter. Our engineers are Kristen McCandless, Tarek Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shireen Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.